Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to talk about Aeolus, a cloud management platform that looks really cool. You're going to want to see this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb, episode 205, recorded March 28th, 2012. Aeolus. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open-source software. I'm your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you almost every week, a few gaps here and there, almost every week, the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the small projects, the projects you've heard a lot about, the projects you've never heard of, like maybe this week's project, unless you listened to us the last couple of weeks to find out about this. But all these wonderful things, and it's such a privilege to be able to interview all these great people and interesting people about the things they're doing in open source. I'm usually assisted by a wonderful co-host, no exception this week, Aaron Newcomb. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Randall. Thanks. Good to be back.
Yeah, and of course, you've got the really cool mic and the really cool place because you're in the studio again. How convenient.
Yeah, in studio. You can't beat it. I got the nice monitors here, and I've got someone. I don't have to push any buttons. You know, John's doing that, so it's really nice.
Very cool. Very cool. And I'm once again, thanks to Media Temple for not only paying my bills for the last year, but providing the space for me to do this. I'm just thinking it's actually been about a year, and I miss saying the 43rd floor of the ninth tallest building in L.A., but I don't miss either working downtown or that elevator ride that makes me nervous or looking out at the helicopters across from me. So it's kind of nice. I'm down here. I'm actually on the first floor this week, so it's kind of nice this way.
Yep.
So, yeah. So anyway, so the show's not about us and where we're taping from. The show is about cool people and cool projects, as I said right in the opening there. This week, no exception. We have Thomas Shedovic, something like that. I've been mispronouncing it for about the last 15 weeks, so we'll have to get him to tell me how that's actually pronounced. And Francesco Valero, that one's probably closer to accurate. We've got them on. They both work for Red Hat. They're both Red Hat employees. And like many of the past weeks, they're working on open source projects. This week's project, no exception to that, this is Aeolus, something like that. Aeolus, which is we mentioned a little bit in the Delta Cloud show a couple weeks ago, where Delta Cloud was sort of this virtual interface that hides all the different APIs for all the different cloud providers away from the programmer, away from the consumer of it. Well, Aeolus goes one step further. So it's sort of about creating multiple machines at the same time and about launching them and get them all talking to each other. And looks like a pretty interesting project. And I think it's going to fit a really nice niche. Is it really a niche when it keeps expanding out? what do you think? What do you know about Aeolus, and what do you think about today's show?
You know, virtually nothing. I hadn't really heard about it until this show. So I'm really kind of curious. I mean, it seems like everything I do at work these days has some sort of a cloud flavor going on. You know, it just seems like everything is cloud, 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 or virtualization, which is obviously tied into cloud very much so. So I hadn't really heard about it. So I'm really excited to find out a little bit more about what it is and where it can be used.
And for those of you who have noticed a kind of a trend in many of the last shows, you notice that Red Hat sort of been involved with that. I just want to thank my friend at Justin Clift, who is, I think, the Red Hat community manager. And he's been actually lining up most of these guests for me. And if you're a little tired about that, stay tuned to the end of the show. We're actually going to start doing things that aren't Red Hat related coming up real soon. If you've been a little tired of all this. But if you haven't, and it's been fascinating for you, keep listening because we've got a really great show coming up. But before we get to there, I want to say we've got a great sponsor today. So this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Netflix. Netflix streams thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you instantly, which means you save time, money, and hassle. There are several easy ways to instantly access streaming movies and TV shows with Netflix. You can watch Netflix movies and TV shows on your Mac or PC or iPad. In fact, I was just using my laptop last night watching Netflix in my hotel room. You can watch on your iPhone and some Android phones too, but don't go over your data limit. Okay, if you have a gaming console like an Xbox 360, a PS3, or a Nintendo Wii, You can watch Netflix right on your TV. I have a PS3. It looks beautiful on my PS3 and my big screen TV. And if you're not a gamer, you can watch Netflix on your TV with an Apple TV or a Roku. I have a Roku. Works really nice there as well. They're inexpensive and easy to use. So with Netflix, you can watch movies and TV shows instantly using any of these devices. And you can begin watching a movie or show on one device and then finish on a different one. Whichever way you choose to access Netflix, you can watch as many movies and TV shows as you want, anytime you want, and you can cancel anytime. So try Netflix today for 30 days for free. Go to netflix.com/twit. That's T-W-I-T. Be sure to use this URL when you sign up for your free trial. netflix.com/twit. We thank Netflix for their support of Twit and Floss Weekly, and we hope you enjoy watching instantly with Netflix. And now, let's go ahead and bring on our guests. First, let's welcome Thomas Sedovic. I hope I pronounced that right. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Randall.
Hi. And how is your name pronounced? That way I'll get it right. I blew it a few times already, so.
Yeah, it's Tomáš Sedovic. It's a Czech name, so it's a bit complicated.
So Sedovic? Is that closer?
Sedovic.
Okay, boy. Yeah. I've been mangling it for like the last 18 weeks as I'm trying to introduce you, so.
It's
great. That's okay. Great, great. And your name has all sorts of little accent marks all over it, too, so it makes it really hard for me to type, which is also sort of fun. And so where are you speaking to us from?
Well, I'm talking to you from Brno, Czech Republic, which is from the Red Hat office in there.
Wow. Well, it's really amazing. I mean, it sounds like you're next door. Amazing technology, internet, so on. Very cool. Let's also bring on our other guest today. That's Francesco Valero. That one should be closer to right. How's that sound?
Yeah, it's quite close. It's Francesco Valero. It's just a matter of accent. No problem.
And where are we speaking to you from? Or where are you speaking to us from?
I'm speaking also from Brno office of Red Hat.
And you two guys can actually see each other, right?
Yeah.
So we got two Skype calls going all the way to the Czech Republic, and it's actually working.
And the quality is awesome. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Red Hat, for providing really, really excellent bandwidth there at your Czech office. So let's go back to Tomáš for a second. So what is, at the beginning of the show, I gave sort of the 30,000 foot view of Aeolus, and I also related a little bit to Delta Cloud. Why don't you start and explain what problem Aeolus is solving and how you got involved with it?
Yeah, all right. So you've had Delta Cloud on, and that's essentially an API for managing, for talking to different cloud providers like EC2 or Rackspace and private ones like, I don't know, OpenStack or Overt and stuff like that. Aeolus goes a bit, a level above that. So what we do, it's again in the topic of avoiding the lock-in to a particular cloud provider. But where Delta Cloud allows you to manage individual instances, what Aeolus brings to the table is managing of multiple instances that sort of know about each other, should be able to talk to each other. Like, I don't know, when you set up an application server, that application server should be able to talk about to a database which might be running on a different server, and they should know each other's APIs, but they don't know these APIs before you've launched them, right? Mm-hmm. If it's a VM. And the other thing is we provide stuff like user access control and allowing you to launch different a development environment. You can launch development environment in on site with one provider, and then say production would be running on EC2 and stuff like that.
Hmm. That's a really interesting problem to solve, because I know that if you're asking for a brand new machine to be launched, then it's going to get its own dedicated IP address, but that's different every time you launch it. So how do I set it up such that my MySQL server over here is, I know its address and able to tell that to like the next layer up, like a web server or maybe an intermediate layer there?
Yeah, so there's a when we launch this, we call this concept the deployment, which is launching a set of multiple instances that are interconnected somehow. And so what we do is that when you describe the deployment, you tell it that, say, this instance requires a particular service, like a database or a web server, and some other instance might provide different services. And then we have this component that when it launches the instances, it sort of resolves these kind of dependencies and figures out that, say, the database must be launched first, and then it won't start, I don't know, the application server before it knows the database's IP address. And we have this one server that where all these instances talk to, and you know, that's how we interchange the data. But this is all a sort of add-on feature, so you don't have to use this unless you actually have that problem. If you want to just manage virtual instances, iOS can do that.
So the basic function of iOS then is to launch servers in a sort of platform independent way using Delta Cloud and other services like that to be able to do this. So I could use this for something as simple as just simply, I want to have a server launched and I want to talk to it. And it's got everything in it, like a web and a MySQL and all that stuff already in one boxes. Now I could have done that with Delta Cloud's interface then. So this is more about creating these runways of groups of machines then.
Yeah. Exactly. Delta Cloud is essentially what we'd like to see as a API that you know you talk to and launch manage instances. But iOS is really more of a set of management tools, so you can access certain, say, providers or two different users. You can add quota, and you can specify that only some people can launch or have access to, I don't know, development environment or production environment and stuff like that. So it sort of takes a look at all the other management stuff apart from individual launching and stopping of instances, which is what Delta Cloud does.
And how did you get involved with the project, and how long has it been around?
It's been around about 3 years, I think. I've got involved 2 years ago where I wanted to join Red Hat because I was interested in open source and I wanted to do something in that space. So I just wrote them and got hired and they put me on this project, essentially.
Okay, and how did the project get started?
So it started about 3 years ago, and it was initially a part of Delta Cloud, which you've had on air 2 weeks ago, I guess.
Yeah.
And at that point, it was really just a web UI for talking to the instances over various clouds, cloud providers. But since then, it kind of evolved to embrace all those management tasks that were actually outside of Delta Cloud's scope, but people still need to do anyway.
Okay, that's very cool. Hey, Francesco, how did you get involved with the project, and how long have you been involved?
Well, I joined Red Hat. Well, I leave Italy to go in Czech Republic just to work for Red Hat because I was interested also in open source. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for a job with Ruby because mostly the companies are looking for Java developers or, some other languages that I used to work with, but I really didn't enjoy. So I was looking for some Ruby project, and I found that Red Hat was hiring. So I sent my request, and I just come to work in Red Hat on EULS. So this is my first project.
Oh, great. That's a good first project to start with, I think. It sounds very exciting. Yeah. Now, let me ask you, going back to your opening, how you described the software, what does can I administer only, this is kind of a, well, let's back up just one more step before we get into that. So this is a project that's sponsored by Red Hat, yes?
Yes.
Okay. So it's a Red Hat sponsored project, but I can manage more than just Red Hat based virtual machines and instances, right?
Yes, of course. You can manage all the instances you want. I mean, it's not just like bundled inside the Red Hat virtualization tool. You can use OVirt, that is open source and is for a community project. And also you can use EC2, that is not Red Hat. And well, vSphere, you can use vSphere instances as well. And maybe you are asking if you can use Debian instead of Fedora
you got it right. That's what I was asking. I was wondering mostly about, you know, Amazon EC2 and VMware, because those are the big players in the market space right now. And of course, there was some recent big news with Eucalyptus and Amazon as well, right? So is Eucalyptus in the mix as well here?
Well, Eucalyptus, it's something that we are planning to support. At the moment, we decided to support EC2 because it's the most biggest public cloud provider. So we can get most feedback from people that use EC2 than people that use Eucalyptus. And and we are planning to support also OpenStack. Mm-hmm. That is our, is the most valuable and most interesting project at the moment in open source for private cloud.
Right. So now, can I manage instances across those services? In other words, if I had some private instances that were dependent on a couple of public instances running on Amazon EC2, for example, is that something that I can do? Because you were talking about dependencies and so forth. Can I manage multiple instances across that, or does all my infrastructure have to be based on Amazon EC2 or just OpenStack or, you know, VMware or something like that?
Well, if I understand correctly, what you're asking for, the thing is even more simple. We don't care about what kind of cloud provider is we have to manage, because it's Delta Cloud that speak with those cloud providers. The only thing is that we need to arrange somehow the interaction between the web interface and what are the needs for the driver. So it's not a problem what you're going to use. You can use EC2, you can use vSphere on Windows, and you can use RevM on Windows as well. It's not a problem.
Okay. And then the other question I had is, you know, what other software would you compare yourselves, for those that maybe aren't familiar with this project but maybe familiar with others, what software would you compare yourselves most with? What other packages do you compete with or projects you compete with?
Well, I think that, as far as I know, there is no other project that is doing the same thing as us. You know, we manage different cloud providers. And there is a project called Open Nebula, and they also manage EC2 and is on cloud system. But as far as I know, this is the only one I heard about.
Yeah.
There is no other that are dealing with us.
Right. Okay. So it's not just me, because I'm familiar with some of the other, like each individual cloud provider has their own management stack, right? So VMware has their own. Amazon has their own. There's even Joyent, for example, who's doing some interesting things, but it's all based off of their version of Solaris, for example. I don't think they're managing other VMs either. So this is really kind of a unique software project in that you're really trying to say, you know, we understand that people may have more than one provider here, and we need to interface with more than we people will want to interface with more than one cloud provider, whether it be private or public.
Exactly.
So sorry, I didn't mean to do your evangelism for you, but I think it's pretty cool that, you know, I think this is, you know, somebody recognized this early on. I don't know who it was, but, you know, okay, there's this big thing happening in cloud, and now we can actually start to see a need for this software to manage across multiple platforms.
Yeah, exactly. This is our point. You know, luckily we just need one API fixed, so we can build our own interface, web interface. And this is done by Delta Cloud. Delta Cloud speak with multiple cloud providers and give us just a fixed access point where we can get information. So instances are instances everywhere for every provider, even if they use other names. So right. I think that thanks, we need really to thank the Delta Cloud project for the effort they are giving us.
Yeah. Yep. It seems to me that there may be some issues because we're talking about private and public at this point, private clouds and public clouds. Are there complications in dealing with trying to manage both, instances in both private and public? What are some of the things you have to deal with when you're considering, private versus public?
Well, it is difficult to say because for us it's transparent, you know. So if we want to run an instance in, let's say, vSphere, and we want to run another instance in EC2, we just run both instances without caring about with who we are speaking. Okay, there is something that is just, for example, for some kind of cloud providers in general. Like Amazon is allowing you to have user data, so your own private file, and another cloud provider doesn't have this service. So we need to deal with these specific things, but it doesn't happen so often. So it's just that.
Yeah.
As far as I know.
Now we've had some. We've had some folks on, a lot of folks actually talking about cloud, as you mentioned. We had Eucalyptus on a while back, and they've kind of got a model where they, in terms of open source, where they give away some of the components for free, some of them are not free. Both natures of free as in beer and free as in liberty. But is this project the same? I mean, is that where this is going? Is there a or is just everything available to anyone that wants to use it?
Yeah, we're trying to do the right thing with regards to open source. So one thing is that Red Hat is building their own product based off IOLUS, but IOLUS is supposed to be a completely community-managed project. Right now, it's mostly people from Red Hat, but we do absolutely want people trying to play with this. We'd love to see some external contributions, and even in terms of things like, you know, improving documentation, giving us suggestions, participating in the detail design phase and stuff like that. Everything we do is open. We have the repository on GitHub. We have public mailing list, which we all use when we write patches. They go through that list. We have IRC channel on Freenode, which we use for, you know, normal communication. And as far as I'm aware, there's apart from things like branding, there's nothing feature wise that the Red Hat product does which IOLUS wouldn't. We're the proper upstream, and they're taking the code from us and, you know, making a product off of it, similarly to, say, the way Fedora versus RHEL works.
So there would actually be some things then that are in the Red Hat release of this, whatever their product is coming out of this, and what I could get for open source from AOLUS directly?
Well, as far as I'm aware at the moment, there's, apart from, as I've said, stuff like logos and branding and some nomenclature, like, you know, they might use different terms for different things. Apart from that, feature-wise or code-wise, there's nothing there. I mean, AOLUS being the upstream has some code that might not get into Red Hat's release because I don't know, they didn't want it to integrate it yet or test it yet, but there isn't anything in CloudForms that isn't in IOLUS.
So it'd be just similar to the issues a while back, like with Firefox and Debian, where they had to call it Ice Weasel or something. I forget what they, Honey Badger or something. But it's just those kinds of things, right? I mean, it's not really any of the code. It's just that some things are trademarked and so forth.
Yeah, right.
And so let's take a step back again, because I want to kind of let people at home kind of get what the sense of this is. So what am I looking at as I'm interacting with AOS? What is the process involved here, and what does it do for me as I'm typing in, I guess, to web screens, things like that?
Yeah, so, well, most of the time, I presume you want to, when you log in, you see the list of instances or deployments, which are the sort of clumps of instances that that work together. So you see all of those, you see their status, you can, you know, interact with them, make sure that they work, restart individual instances, or investigate when things go wrong. And then apart from that, we have, you know, you're allowed to, via the UI, to select new instances or deployments that you want to launch and do that. That's essentially the main user workflow. So you would manage that. Apart from that, we have a sort of admin interface where you can do stuff like manage users and assign individual rights to them. So you can, you know, make sure that only some people can access some sensitive data, where you can set quotas and things like that, where you can add new providers or add new accounts.
Yeah, and I understand sorry, go ahead.
One more thing which we haven't mentioned yet and that we do is we allow you to sort of specify a particular sort of template for a virtual image. Say you can say that I want to run, I don't know, a Fedora that has HTTPD and, I don't know, Postgres installed. And so you specify the software that's supposed to be in that virtual image. And from that, we are able to build the actual image that we would then upload to each individual provider. So we would build the EC2 image, which allows you to launch that particular instance that you've just described in EC2, and then you can do the same thing with Overt or any other cloud provider that supports this.
Now, does that mean that there's some process that kicks in where you actually launch the image locally and then, say, install packages from the repository?
Yeah, exactly.
And what are you using locally for the local virtual image then?
We're using a part of Files project. There's this tool called OZ, OZ.
Okay.
And that uses KVM internally for doing this kind of stuff.
So essentially, before you've shipped the image to one of the providers, you're actually... Yep. Firing it up, running the whatever install and configuration scripts you need to make, and that's probably where you can also add the IP addresses of the associated boxes and things like that. And then you're then, you know, re-imaging that and then setting that up. Is that process? Would that have to happen on every launch, or can I have some sort of canned image that just say go?
What we do is this doesn't happen on launch. This happens once. You create the sort of canned image that you then upload or register with the individual provider. Mm-hmm. And then we just say, okay, launch, run a new instance of this image. And once that happens, it just does whatever the provider does to do that, to launch the instance. So this setup where we, you know, install the OS and make sure that all the packages are in there, that happens only once.
Okay, and how do you deal with the difference in image formats? Like, you know, EC2 uses AMIs, and I know other cloud providers use different, like, you know, KVM images or things like that. So how do you handle that difference?
Well, so that's what OZ does. I'm not too familiar with the inner workings of that, but essentially that little project, all it does is we send its specification and for which provider it's supposed to build the image, and it just does the right thing. So it has to know about all those specific formats, and than it builds the image.
Okay, I'm probably going to ask a sacrilegious question to a Red Hat guy, but the whole world is not Linux. Does this support any other native operating systems?
As far as image building goes, I think there went some effort to building Windows images, which I think should be working now, though I haven't checked in a while. I'm mostly a Linux guy myself, but yeah, we do realize that there are people who have to manage Windows, and while it's not supported at the moment, we think we want to get there. So yeah, there's been some work that did go into that space.
Okay, and, well, you're still missing my favorite kind of distros, though, the BSDs. Can it do anything like that?
I don't know whether we can build the BSD images right now, but there shouldn't be any reason why we shouldn't be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the thing is, right now we mostly care about Linux because it seems like the thing that most of our users would use. But yeah, if there are people who want to run BSD, we absolutely welcome the patches, and you know, if there's a good enough community, if the community wants us to do that and there's good enough push, then I see no reason why we shouldn't do that.
It certainly seems like if you're going to turn this into an enterprise solution, you know, adding things like BSD would be somewhat important, but even more important would be the Windows part. Solaris, certainly for enterprise users, is going to be important to do. And adding support for things like Oracle VM might be important. Yep. As a little plug for my employer there. That's all I have to do. I'm done for the day. But, you know, just taking the enterprise angle a little bit more, and certainly it sounds like people that are familiar with those systems could obviously contribute patches to do that, right?
Yeah. I mean, philosophically and technologically, I see no reason why that shouldn't be the case. It's just that it wasn't that big of a priority for us.
Right.
As of yet.
Yeah, sure. I just had a quick question based on what you were talking about with Oz, which is this installer portion. But it looks like it's run as a separate, certainly it's run as a separate package, but I think even a separate project in a way. Why isn't that bundled in with the main project? Why is it separate?
So one thing is that you might actually want to run that on a separate machine in production. And so it makes sense that you'd install just the one part and install the other things on another machine. And the other is we kind of try to make things a bit modular. So ILUS isn't one single repository. It's a set of tools that are aware of each other and provide features for each other. And in concert, they do the thing that they're supposed to.
It seems like I'm just kind of thinking of this in the back of my head, almost like the way Red Hat does stuff. When you have if you want to do unattended installs, for example, it sounds like that's kind of running on a separate server. You probably don't have all the other packages loaded there. It's just really just doing installs. So that makes sense. I can see that.
Also, the other thing is that because we're building the images, because we need to run a VM while building the image, it kind of requires us to run KVM, and to be ideally on the bare metal. So it means that Oz, at least presently, cannot run, I don't know, in the cloud, or cannot run on systems that don't support the KVM features that we need, which means that, as far as I can tell, it also doesn't run on OS X or on... I don't know what's the BSD status right now, but I'm not sure we support that either yet. but there's no reason why you couldn't run the rest of the tools either in the cloud or, you know, on another system, because the rest is just Ruby and Rails code that shouldn't be system dependent. So the separation of the components makes sense in that way as well. If you want to run these other things on different systems, which don't have to be necessarily bare metal, then you have the choice.
Right, and it sounds like there's also quite a bit of, I'm imagining here, there's probably quite a bit of tuning. In other words, the project work on these two things are probably quite a bit different. In other words, with Oz, it sounds like when a new release comes out of Ubuntu or of whatever, it sounds like there's probably quite a bit of, or a little bit of tuning that has to go on every time just to make sure it works correctly.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of interesting as I'm listening to this, and same things happen with all the other, like the previous projects. We've had a whole string of like the last five or six shows, actually about eight shows, but a couple of shows in between. But with these projects that are heavily supported by Red Hat, I'm sort of curious now about how the governance actually works in terms of who drives the project list, who drives the task list. Is this driven by Red Hat requests, or is Red Hat just a player in the list of the community that can make requests or send in patches? And Francesco, we haven't talked to you in a bit, so I want to let you take that question.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, the point is that we usually listen for community to, well, you know, we just started the project and it's somehow it's in development. So we really like to have someone that will suggest us other features to implement. For example, Eucalyptus. We are looking forward for someone that sent on mailing list on IRC question about why we are not yet supporting Eucalyptus and we are supporting vSphere. But the matter of thing is that we try to satisfy the most larger use base. So for that, we get a bit of priority on vSphere and EC2, but also we will support it. We will support other platforms. So we really need developers and the community to help us. So we are very open to listen on community and see what they need and on what they are interested.
So even though you're collecting money from Red Hat today, because that's just your job, Red Hat's just a player in the list of people who can make suggestions about direction or provide resources.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Great. That clears it up a little bit. And along that line then, what percentage of your contributions or your commits, I would say, are from inside your own group versus outside in the community at this point?
Well, at the moment, we have one committer from community, and we are really looking forward to get some other people interested. We at the moment it's like 90-95% from Red Hat, and the other is. But you have to think that the project is somehow very, very young. For example, Delta Cloud that started in the same matter of time. Now is getting contribution from other players. And it's just because it's evolving and people are listening on what we are doing, even with Delta Cloud, because I contribute on Delta Cloud as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we are growing up. We are just kids at the moment. So we need people to help us to develop even more the project.
Well, that scares me from the other direction. So you say you're a pretty young project. Is this usable yet? Can I put this in at least a development environment, if not production? And if not, how soon before you think this will be ready to actually cook with?
Well, this is a bit tricky because the project, yes, it's young, but it's working. I mean, we have a lot of features that at the moment work. For example, we can manage instances from EC2. We can import instances from your EC2 account, if you want. We can manage vSphere completely, and we can manage RevM and OVIRT. So if you are not able to afford the vSphere, you can use obviously OVIRT, and you're going to have the same results. So we are trying to move fastly, but it's like 0.8 version, so it's neither one. We really are working on this just to improve it. But at the moment, it's usable.
Okay, so I shouldn't walk down the hallway here and say, drop everything we're doing with Open Nebula. We want this instead.
Well, no. and I want to say that because Open Nebula is another very interesting project. And so I think, and at the moment, with Delta Cloud, we have their contribution. So they write the Delta Cloud driver for us, mm-hmm. and they are maintaining it. So we want to work together more than just throw them out from the puddle.
Okay, and what so you need? You want more contributors, more people that can provide services. What kinds of specific talent and areas of development are you looking for?
Well, everyone, every field, because as we, for example, I am a developer, a Ruby developer, but also I have background in Perl. By the way, thanks for your great book. Yeah. And yeah. And but it's C++ needed as well because our project is mostly Ruby, but there are components, for example, OAS or Image Factory, that is the component that build images that is wrote in Python. Mm-hmm. So Python developers are welcome. Windows developers are welcome as well if they have some knowledge of Python and they want to deal with Windows and they don't want to move in Linux. They can give their contribution in Windows. Or, for example, we have other components that are in C, C++. So everyone is very welcome. And by the way, for administration tools, someone need to write some code in Perl. I cannot do just for myself.
Ah, well, there might be a little contribution I can make there then. Not that I have the time anymore, but yeah, okay. I guess it's the problem with having... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So outside the code, we'd absolutely want to have people, you know, trying this thing out, sending us feature requests and bug requests. That's a huge way how you can contribute. And also, we'd love to make the documentation better. So if people want to help with that, that'd be awesome. And also, you know, just things like helping out other users, going on to the mailing list and the IRC channel, and helping people out. That's great as well. I mean,
you know, I'm whatever, just thinking this. Sorry,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Whatever talent or you want to bring in, I'm sure we can find something that you can do.
And how does the licensing work on this? First, what license is it under, and are you requiring copyright assignments for people that are contributing?
Yeah, it's Apache software license version 2, mm-hmm. and we don't require any contributor agreement. Not now, and I'm not aware of any reason why we should in the future. Though I guess we'll see, but. No, not at the moment, and we don't plan to.
Well, an Apache license is actually pretty broad, so it makes it easy to not really need contributor agreements. Yeah. You mostly need that if you're going to change one of the GPL licenses from one level to another. So mm-hmm. makes sense, definitely. And getting back to the sort of the open sourceness of this, how many people inside Red Hat are working on this?
About 20 people working on it from different areas and on different components. Some people are just, drop in, do some work and then never come again. And some are working on that full time. I think, about 20 people, I think, working on various things on IELTS full time.
And we may have covered this already before, but what platforms will this run on? Obviously, Red Hat Enterprise Linux, it will clearly run on. Yeah. But where else can I run this? I even saw something mentioned of OS 10 somewhere. So where can I run these tools?
So there are two things again. We talked about OS, and the only you can't run OS, as far as I know, on OS 10 mm-hmm. or on the BSDs. But all the other tools are written in Ruby on Rails and should work everywhere where Ruby on Rails does. So that should mean all the flavors of Linux, OS X, the BSDs. I presume Solaris as well, though I'm not sure anyone ever tried that. By the way, speaking of the contributions, if anyone actually wants to, you know, try to run this on a different platform or make sure that it gets run there, that'd be a great way to contribute, absolutely.
Very cool, very cool. And how did you said you joined Red Hat because you really wanted to work on open source? Maybe that was Francisco. Maybe both of you guys actually said that. What was your experience of open source before that? How did you get involved with open source?
Well, before that, I was mostly a user. I was reading a lot of code, and I was looking into trying to find a way to contribute back as well, but. And I think I would have ended up there eventually, but sort of at that time when I was looking for projects that I might contribute back to, I got hired by Red Hat. So that was great.
Well, good timing for that. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
And Francisco, how did you get involved with open source?
Well, mostly I got involved through in university. When I joined university in 2002, I was part of a group of enthusiastic Linux users, and we was having a small lug inside my university. So I start going around with those bad guys, and I got involved. But if I remember correctly, the first time I got involved with open source, so was the first time I ran Linux, and was an old Slackware 3.0 in my own computer, and I can say that last version of Red Hat that I installed when I was young before university was Red Hat 5.1. So wow. It's like historical. Yeah, I was from the beginning. I fall in love with Linux, and after Perl, and after Ruby. So it's all about that. By the way, in the university, I start going around and spreading the open source way of developing. So, I end up in Red Hat when I was somehow given up that many companies want to have just closed source. So for me, it was a win-win condition.
So, just a couple of questions that I wanted to squeeze in here. I usually ask about infrastructure with a lot of these projects. You know, what do you really need to run this? We've talked about that a little bit, but since it's a management, mostly management, I'm guessing at least for the management piece, you don't need a bulky server with lots of memory and you know, terabytes of disk, right?
Well, no.
No. Short and to the point. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I think this is the best way. No, you don't need any Oracle server, for sure.
Right, right.
Nor IBM. You can run it on your bare metal machine or your laptop, and you can manage all the whole thing. Obviously, if gonna be, well, you need to have an adapt machine if you want to have OVIRT or other cloud systems, right. Private cloud systems. So you cannot simulate all in your machine. But for sure, all the whole life cycle can be managed on a laptop.
Yeah.
We here in the office, we are doing it this way.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So that's good. So my question, instead of infrastructure, is going to be, I just want to make sure, you guys said the interface was all web UI, right? So I could actually use the management tools on a mobile device too, right? Like a tablet or maybe a smartphone or something.
Well, if it's HTML5, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure because I always try to throw the mobile angle in there as well. So as we're wrapping up, let me ask you, what's in the works for future releases? What kind of features are you guys working on right now?
Right. So one thing is this shouldn't be just about the UI because administrators absolutely need to automate stuff. So we have some API and some command line tools, but for the next for the future, we want to make sure that the API and the command line tools are on par with the web stuff. So essentially anything you can do in the web UI, you should be able to do via an API or via command line as well. So that's one thing. The other is we want to add more support for more providers. So right now we focused on EC2, Overt, Revam, and vSphere, but we absolutely want to add OpenStack. We have one contributor who's writing the code for that now, and we want to add other stuff like Eucalyptus and essentially any other provider that the people would like to see. We want to during the time we're nearing the first release 1.0, it should happen in about a month and a half, I think. And so we want to do some code cleanup after that, because some stuff did aggregate there over the years that doesn't look as well as it should. We want to improve the UI, obviously, because as people are using it, we'll see hopefully how to make things better. And I think that's about it. There's a lot of other stuff on our website. We again, all the planning and stuff like that we do in the open, so you can just read through the mailing list archives or go to our wiki and see what we're up to.
So we've asked a lot of questions, and there's probably a lot more that could be asked, but we're almost out of time. So I just wanted I want to ask each of you if there's anything we didn't cover that you really thought we needed to for this show. Thomas, I'm going to ask you first.
I think we've covered everything, so cool. Thanks.
Okay, and Francesco, same question?
Not everything, just that we want more contributor. I want to market very, very strongly because we want community to get involved more.
We don't
want just to be Red Hat product.
Okay.
We want to be community. And since we didn't cover it too,
where the best place to go for people, I know it's not on the lower thirds here for you guys, so yeah. Where's the best place to go to get more information or to actually start contributing?
So that's owlsproject.org, which is a bit difficult name to type. So it's AEOLUS and then project.org.
And is there any way we get an I in there so you get all the vowels?
Yeah, we're thinking about that. No,
sometimes
it's
a Y.
Actually the name is the name of a Greek god who's supposed to be a god of wind, so it kind of manages clouds. So.
So you could just change the project name to Aeolus Wind Project. That would be great.
Yeah, no, I thought that was great. Yeah. I looked when when I first typed it into Google, that's the wiki page for the Greek god came up first.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, that's brilliant. The god of wind, of course. It makes perfect sense. Yep.
All right. And now my final two questions, of course, because again, if I don't ask these, I now get email that says, why didn't you ask these guys your questions? So here's the tradition again. So we'll start with Thomas, your favorite scripting language and your favorite text editor.
So my favorite scripting language is actually Python, and mm-hmm. my favorite editor at the moment is Emacs. I used to use Vim for about 5 years, and I switched.
What convert?
Yep. Good deal. And Francesco, same questions?
Well, I can say Ruby and Vim, because I'm BSD fan.
You stabbed me from all the way from the Czechoslovakia, or the Czech Republic. Sorry, not Czechoslovakia. That's the old country. Right. All right. Yeah. Well, thank you guys both for being on the show. I'm sorry we don't have any more time to ask any more questions, but thank you both for being on the show representing the Aeolus Project.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Thanks to you.
Very good. Very good. That was, see if I get this right, Tomas Shedovich and Francesco Volero, or something really close to that. Aaron, what do you think?
I think this is great. I mean, like I said, we've had a lot of cloud projects on. There's obviously a lot of interest in this since the industry is really focusing on cloud right now. It seems like everything is cloud. But what I like about this project is its uniqueness and the fact that there isn't really a whole lot of other people trying to do this, surprisingly enough. Mm-hmm. You would think that there would be. So it makes perfect sense for an open source project to step in, right? And kind of drive this and make it happen. Also, it's very, from an enterprise standpoint, since I deal with enterprise a lot, from an enterprise standpoint, this would be very interesting to me, because the last thing you want is to get locked in, right? A lot of people right now are locked into VMware. And they there may be something better that comes down the road that they may be interested in. But if you don't have the tools, you know, if you have to go learn a whole new set of tools to manage something else, that can be a big problem. Mm-hmm. And so by being able to use this tool to manage different implementations, then, you know, it's a really big benefit. And certainly if I was running enterprise, it's something that I would at least look into and maybe, you know, have someone start using it just in case, you know, you get to that point where, you know, whatever happens, VMware raises their prices, you don't like them anymore, whatever, you can switch to something else very easily and still keep the same management interface.
Exactly. And that's going to be more and more important as we go along, as you said. But what I also like about this project, and actually the last five or six projects we've had this, that have been, you know, at least heavily funded by Red Hat, is that, you know, Red Hat has made a lot of money off of open source, but they're really doing the community the right thing here and giving back as much as they can by hiring full-time people that are creating essentially upstream projects from their commercial offerings so that we can get the benefit of that as well. It's really being a real solid player, and I really appreciate what they're doing for this. I know there's a few other corporations that used to do this in a big way. Our friend Simon used to work for one. So, I'm sorry. I forget who else is on this call.
And me too. I used to work for him too. So, it's,
Anyway, but so I really appreciate that this sort of giving back to the community, because it also means that I can be pretty sure that Aeolus is going to be around a year from now. That we're not going to have, like, because of a lack of volunteer support or maybe a lack of funding or something like that, it's not going to stick around. So, any of these past five or six projects that we've talked to that Red Hat's been funding, I can pretty much, you know, as long as Linux makes money, I think this is probably going to be around. Is that your observation as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's kind of a little bit of a vacuum since Sun left, or didn't leave, but was acquired and whatever. There's a little bit of a vacuum in the open source community in terms of people that are willing to step up and support these projects. Certainly Google is doing that as well. Red Hat's doing it and others. So, and I like the fact that they, that everything is open. Yeah. I can understand the branding, because that's required actually from a corporate standpoint. That's like the very least you can not do in terms of when you take a package like this on and put it into something like Red Hat. So I like the fact that they left it all open, and what a great project to get involved with. I mean, I hope that people that are listening that want to get involved in something, that's, really hot right now in the industry, and they want to get involved in open source. This is a great project, it sounds like, for someone to get their feet wet.
And not only that, but this is something you could actually use locally. You know, we confirmed that, yes, you know, you can actually just launch your own little VMs inside your own box with this.
Right.
And one thing, I don't know if we've talked about this enough on this show, is that by being a contributor to an open source project before you're, you know, like just as you're entering the workforce, or maybe you're, you know, between jobs or something, if you have some spare time and you contribute to an open source project, that is a really nice bullet point on your resume. And because it is a good thing that you're doing that first, but it also means you have skill set that is demonstrable in public. People can go check out your patches that you made and take a look and see what kind of thing. And I know that as a hiring manager, I'd love to see that on people's resume. I did this project. I worked on that project. Look at these CPAN modules and see what I've done there. And this is a great way to you know, build up your resume if you're between jobs or, like I said, just entering the workforce.
Absolutely. It's something I always recommend to young people that are looking to get into this line of work, either programming or even other work. It's a great way because it doesn't take any, you know, you don't have to pay for it. Your current boss isn't going to necessarily be upset that you're going, you know, like to help another group out at work. If you're looking to change jobs or get into this in some way, not just for college, you know, recent college grads, but also for people that are looking to change their career maybe and move out of something else into something like this. It's a great way to get started. It's almost a necessity these days.
Yeah, and this is a particularly interesting project in that level, in that it probably will not compete with anything your current employer is doing.
Right.
You know, very few people are in the space.
So unless you work for VMware or, you know.
Yeah. So don't do this if you do that. That'd be right. Kind of scary. Your boss will go, hey, right. What are you doing helping the competition?
Yeah, the non-compete clause in your contract may come into play there.
Yeah, it's great. Speaking of non-compete, let's look at the upcoming guest list. There's my awkward transition of the week.
That was bad.
I have one. I've been lax in that the last couple of weeks. I had to do this one this time. Not a lot actually scheduled. I've been lax, speaking of lax again, in sending out enough email to really fill in the schedule. But we do have a really interesting project next week, and especially timely, given some open source news I heard last couple of days. We have Yannick Warnier, who's going to talk to us about Camilo, which is software that's similar to Blackboard and other sort of student management and student like homework management interaction sort of thing, make sure that you can have college courses delivered over the wire and stuff. And in case you hadn't heard, who was the commercial company and who was the open source one there? Blackboard acquired what's the other one? Anyway, so there's
an M, right?
Yeah, it's something like that. Yeah. I just saw it go by yesterday in Google Plus. I should have bookmarked it, and now here I am trying to talk about it and completely screwing up. Anyway, so they're going to come on next week and talk about that. We have also on the already scheduled list, we have Liz Quilty, who is a big person in open source and comes to us from New Zealand, so the timing for the show is going to be sort of interesting. And also just added to the schedule, Sean Schofield and Spree Commerce, which is a big open source commerce platform, basically a shopping cart, but on steroids, as they always say. Everything's on steroids, even though it doesn't mean anything for most of software. No meaning with that. We do have a lot of other people on the short list. We're just looking at scheduling Citadel, which is a BBS, like a web forum conferencing sort of thing. We've got people from the KVM project, from LibreOffice. We're going to get them back on. The KDE itself, Nanoc, and a bunch of others. Anyway, go to twitch.tv/floss. And you can see the spreadsheet we've linked from there. If you have a project that belongs in that list that isn't currently, please have the project leader email me, merlin@stonehenge.com, and I will make sure he gets added to the list. Those are the best kind of guests because they already come ready to be scheduled, so that's even more fun. If you follow us on at Floss Weekly on Identica and Twitter, we also have a Google Plus page that all my hosts and I can post to when we've got an upcoming show or a scheduling happening. You can also follow me as Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on both Twitter and Identica, although typically only use the Twitter side of that. But more frequently, I am posting to Google+. So go check my Google+ page out. If you search for Randall L. Schwartz, you're almost certain to find that. I have about four or five postings there a day. I leak some of them over to Facebook, but really I just consider Facebook a dumping ground. So all my links eventually end up in Facebook, and it's just because I don't really care. If it ends up there two or three times, it's just a dumping ground. Some of my friends are on Facebook, so I have to be there instead. If you this weekend I actually have a guest spot. I am going to be on the Overthinking It podcast. Podcast I've been listening to for many years. I've actually been on the podcast a few times already. Overthinkingit.com, doing a special show somewhat built around the theme of April 1st, if I recall correctly. So we're taping it on Sunday. You want to actually, there's no live feed for it, though. You still have to subscribe and get it on Monday or Tuesday. And I also want to say I will be making a very special announcement. You do not want to miss it. If you listen to this show, you should go check that show out because I'm going to be making a very special announcement there. There's where I'm breaking the new information. I'll be in Amsterdam April 3rd and 4th, having meetups, tweetups on both nights of that in preparation for my river cruise I'm taking right after that. And I'm also going to be at the other end of that cruise. I'll be in Geneva on April 19th. So if you're in the Geneva area or the Amsterdam area, please watch my tweets. I will tell you what hotel I'm at or where I'm having a meetup, something like that. Enough plugging for today. Aaron, how about you?
Yeah, so you can always follow me. You can go to thesourceshow.org and watch all of my old podcasts. I mean, I haven't had time to do one lately. It's horrible.
The classics.
Catch the classics over on thesourceshow.org. Definitely, I'm into your circles on Google Plus because that's where I spend most of my time. I miss a lot of stuff on Facebook now because I'm not there as much as I am on Google Plus. So just keep that in mind if you're trying to get in touch with me. Probably the easiest way is to either go to thesourceshow.org and email me or you can just go to Google Plus. That's the easiest thing. I do want to mention next week I'll be in Dallas at the Omni, I think it is. There's a storage conference down there that I'm going to for work, so I will be there. It's called SNW, Storage Networking World. So if you happen to be a storage person and you're going to be down in Dallas, last time somebody who watches the show was down there and kind of flagged me down and said, and I said, oh, can I help you with a question about, you know, blah, 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 storage product? And they're like, no, I watch you on Floss. You're great. So, so I was like, yeah, cool. That's great. So anyway, if you're going to be in the area, definitely go there. I also want to just remind people that there is a Linux conference coming up. Indiana Linux Fest is coming up April 13th through the 15th at the Westin, Indianapolis West. So if you happen to be kind of in the middle part of the country or close to Indianapolis, or you can get to Indianapolis, it's definitely a conference you want to check out. They've got some good speakers. Amber Grainer of Linaro, as well as Ian Murdoch, I think, is giving the closing keynote of Debian fame. What I really like about it too is they have a hackerspace village set up. So when you go to the conference, if you're into making things and hacking on old technology or even new technology, if you like to blend your iPad, the new iPad, you can go there and do all that kind of stuff. So it's a lot of fun. So definitely check it out. It's free. You can go for free, or you can actually contribute and you get like a t-shirt and some other things, a free lunch or something, if you actually contribute some money. So definitely go check out Indiana Linux Fest if you're in the area.
Very cool. Very cool. And I just wanted to say also, I forgot, as I'm staring down at the chat room here, we do have a live chat that goes on during the show. And we actually took a couple questions directly from the chat room during this show. So if you're interested in our guests and want to have an opportunity to have your own question answered for those guests, feel free to pop in and say hi to us. The typing time is generally 9:30 a.m. Pacific time. On Wednesdays, West Coast time in the U.S. But we do change occasionally. We actually have a couple of slight alterations scheduled coming up. So watch for our tweets, watch for our announcements. You'll find out when we're actually taping. And you go to live.twit.tv. You've also a calendar there. You can always look directly at that. Well, with that, I must say, Aaron, once again, thank you for driving all the way from your home up to the studio in Petaluma to have the really wonderful camera and the big mic to do that. And thank you for hosting once again. And thank you for hosting the few times that I've been out of the area and you've had to take over that role. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. Look forward to doing it again sometime.
Very good. Very good. Well, as I say every time right about this time of the show, we'll see you again next week on Floss Weekly.